You're listening to The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, bringing class to trash since 1977.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, and we are back. Last week, we apologize, as I put on the Facebook page, I was under the weather, and just could not get the schedule to work, and honestly, could not get my voice to work either. So, Sammy and Will are here this week to discuss a little jam for you from the early 70s called Murphy's War, directed by Peter Yates, and from Arrow Video. Our good friends at Arrow Video, who sent us a copy of this. So that's what we'll be doing. Will, how you doing? Gonna turn the microphone up there.
You know, this has been almost 16 years. You would think by now this wouldn't happen, but here we are. Thank you for the gentle reminder. I am doing well, all things considered. Looks like the winter is behind us here in the Great White North and the rest of the hemisphere. For those that have to endure it, no real complaints, man. We're post Oscars.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty good show by and large. To be honest with you, it was breezy. They kept it tight. I think it's interesting to see that the Academy is starting to consistently reward quirky films or international films more, right? So,
yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah, that was
ran the show a little bit there for a while. I think they picked up 4 or 5 awards for Poor Things. So,
yeah,
it was nice to see. Anatomy of Fall was in the discussion for best film. You know, that's Parasite and Everything Everywhere have tidied up quite nicely in the past few years. So, yeah, it's good to see. I wanted Lily Gladstone to grab the hardware, but you know, Emma Stone was very deserving for Poor Things. So
yeah. I'd seen Poor Things since. I might talk about that and what we've been watching this week or next week. But yeah, I mean, I can understand why she won. I get it. It's a quirky, strange, odd, crazy performance, to say the least.
Yeah.
And that's an odd movie, to say the least. I mean, it's just, sometimes I'm still surprised occasionally that certain things get made. And that's definitely one of those. I don't really know how to describe that movie other than odd.
Yeah, it definitely is odd. But I'm glad that's being embraced now, right, by the Academy. I don't know if the median age has gone down. It's kind of like what we talked about with Criterion and other boutique labels. The people running the show are a little younger. They grew up with genre films and international films and so interesting. But one thing I did want to mention that I meant to talk to you about this before we started was something I know that you back 100%. Our dear, dear, dear friend, longtime friend, Matt.
Yeah.
Is going through
Matsuzaka, for those who
Matsuzaka.
Yeah.
Yeah, Matsu Zaka, Madhouse, is going through a pretty tough time right now, looking for a kidney donor. One of his kidneys that was already a donated kidney from his wonderful wife, Liz, has failed. At least I think it's that one that the body had rejected it.
Yes.
Okay. So they are looking for a live donor. I know this is a long shot. There's something in our Facebook group, or you could reach out to us privately. And they're looking for a donor, or if there's anything you can help to donate, just because of the situation has really waylaid them as far as Matt being able to provide for his family, their daughter and their wife, and they're doing everything they can. But Matt's one of us, and you know he's a wonderful person. So reach out to us if either of those things are viable. If it's a kidney, that'd be quite the story. If it's donating even a few dollars to help them, that would be great. And maybe we can put this the link to the GoFundMe in the show notes for a few weeks.
Yeah, maybe. I'll try if I can remember. But I did put it up on the group for that reason because I was I know some folks are going to want to help, and I appreciate everybody that has helped. And we do what we can for our loved ones, and Matt is one of our loved ones. He's family. I mean, he was there from the very beginning.
Day one, man.
Yeah, he was part of a group of fans that listened to another podcast, and he's been there from the get-go, so we try to do everything we can. We're hoping to visit him sometime soon, and all that good stuff, so... Yeah, please help if you can. I mean, even if it's, I understand everybody's got things going on, but even if it's just $5, I mean, anything helps. And we appreciate, we don't usually ask for those kinds of things, but
no, this is a pretty heavy situation for a really wonderful person.
Yeah.
Wonderful family.
Yeah. Wonderful group of people. Right. So we help our own as much as we can. So, to go to the group, you can see the link there if I haven't posted it in the notes. I'm only saying that because I am notorious for forgetting that and then going back and editing it later.
But it is at the top of our Facebook page.
Yes, it is.
And you can reach out to either one of us privately on Instagram or Facebook.
Yes.
Instagram is probably a little better for me because I'm not on Facebook very often. But either way, and I'll try to make a point to check. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and thanks for that, guys.
Yep, thanks. All right, we'll get into a little bit of feedback, and we'll go from there. This is from Jacob, a good friend Jacob. He says, I agree going to the movies is becoming cost prohibitive in a streaming world. I signed up for MoviePass again to try to save some money, and initially I was able to see two movies a month, and one of them was free, but they changed the plan, so now I have to say, now I save like $3 on going to see a movie. Not really worth it since I get billed monthly, even if I don't go see a movie. I believe the only way that a movie theater can survive is to emphasize social connection and offer more grown-up food choices. This is a pretty good. Right now, they want to get you into the theater, offer you junk food, and then you are expected practically to run out the door after the movie is over. If they offered a place to sit and discuss the movie with your friends, and it became a hangout spot where I might want to order some food or drink and talk about movies, I'd be more interested in going. We all don't want to miss the beginning of a movie, but after it's over, I'm not going to worry about lines so much and would be more willing to buy food after the movie than before. Think of the multiplexes that show the movies to empty theaters. Convert one of those theaters into a restaurant. Also, I don't want a soda or popcorn or candy, but I'd buy a good taco or a good hamburger. If they offered good coffee, I'd buy that too. I know concessions is where they make their money, but I don't really want what they offer. Theaters need to be placed where people watch a movie, hang out, eat something decent. Otherwise, going to a theater is inconvenient, expensive, and outmoded by streaming. As much as I love the theater, how do you think theaters can be saved? And P.S., I tried to do a voice message, and I got a 404 error from Spotify. Don't know if it's on your end or Spotify's. Okay. Well, some people have had problems with the voice messaging system through the app. So... and through the website. So we appreciate the email either way. You know, I like this idea. I think the only problem there is that the cost prohibitiveness of running a restaurant, right? And even though that would be awesome, and there are some places that are restaurants / movie theaters nowadays, you really got to invest. And I just don't think the mass theater experience will ever probably invest in that because they've went so long just offering... you know, quick treats and junk food. And there's nothing wrong with offering junk food. I mean, a lot of people go to the movies to for an excuse to eat junk food, but it would be nice if they offered a more quality product. And yeah, I would probably pay for it. And I definitely like the idea of one of the theater rooms being a converted restaurant hangout spot after a movie. I love the idea in theory. I just don't know if it'll ever happen. What do you think?
I'm like you, but I also think one of the hurdles you have there is a lot of people, you know, we are the niche audience, and a lot of people that love films, a lot of film festivals to validate that. But a lot of times people want to watch the film. They want to get home to their family, right? Yep. Time is a challenging thing. And then with the engagement people have on social media, a lot of times they can be home with their family and do that. So, well, I love Jacob's idea in a perfect world. I think it's a hard thing to apply, right? And then, of course, as with everything, it's a business first. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where the sweet spot is. In a perfect world, that would exist, and it'd be something that we could all flock to, congregate to, put our money to. But I don't know. It's rarely does the perfect world rear its head.
Yeah, I think it would, you know, I don't know. It's become a mass experience of in and out. And I don't know if it could change at this point. I think, unfortunately, it's going to have to change in some way, though, for it to survive, that is. I'm not saying that it absolutely has to change. I think there will always be movie theaters to some degree, but I think the multiplexes will also start to suffer because they've just kind of priced themselves out of a market. I think I saw a survey the other day that said that over 70 or 80% of people will wait for a movie to come to streaming instead of going, you know, post-COVID, instead of going to the theater. And that seems accurate. It seems like most people I know personally, and this is not the connoisseur, you know what I mean? They will wait. They'll be like, well, there's no need for me to go. It'll hit streaming either next week or the week after, depending on how it does at the box office. It'll only cost me $20 to $25 to rent it because that's the new model. And that might end up damaging the movie theater completely. Just because people just won't go. Now, we can talk about this for hours and say, you know, you don't get the same sound quality, maybe even the same picture quality. But I don't know if people really care about that as much as people think. So, again, that might be a connoisseur thing. So, it's very interesting. And obviously, things are going to change. I mean, it's just bound to happen. So, we'll see what happens. We'll be around either way.
That's right. Jake, thanks as always. Jacob, thanks as always for the food for thought.
Yeah, literally, in this case. A good taco or a good hamburger. Solid. All right, I got a voicemail from Walt here. Let's see if we can play it.
Gentlemen, it takes a lot of rehearsal to be this spontaneous. Enjoyed your recent review of Ron, A Flock of Kurosawa's. My journey through Hong Kong cinema of the 1980s continues. Watched a film from 1983 called Seating of a Ghost. You've seen crazy Hong Kong horror movies before. This one's pretty dang crazy. Starts as a revenge movie, but has a nice ramp up from the second half, I would say, into the pretty crazy climax, which is reminiscent of The Thing, From Beyond, and Contamination. See, I could have said Alien instead of Contamination, but I said Contamination, and that gives me geek film cred. My This or That this week, inspired by the very hygienic shower scene in Seating of a Ghost. Soap on the body or soap on the rag to the body? A little less personal, maybe. Shaw Brothers or Warner Brothers? Thanks, guys.
Ooh. The soap one's a bit tricky, and I'll explain myself for that. I'm sure we all have a preference. I know I have a preference, but there are times when I use the other option. So what do you think, Will? Soap to the body or soap on the rag to the body?
Okay, firstly, Kotzi lives.
Yes, that's right.
So, yes.
We reviewed Contamination a long time ago.
Yeah, respect, Walt. I am going to say it's a slight variation on the rag. So for years, I got to say this. Get a little pro tip action here. I'm 44.
Here we go.
I'm terribly vain.
Here we go.
My body is getting older. So yes. I've employed a few practices to help slow things down a little bit as much as I can. Take care of my body a little more. I hydrate. I try to get more sleep. I moisturize. I use a good facial moisturizer, cream under my eyes, oil on my skin. You know, there's things I do. And one of these things is in the shower, I use one of those like shower puffs. You know those? They're like almost like a puff, like a, they're not a sponge.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So I use the shower puffs because they lather up pretty good, man. So I used to be soap on the body for probably like 40 years of my life. Mm. I mean, not 40. My mom, you know, I was bathing like however I was bathing as a, you know, young baby. But yeah, I like the shower puff, man. I love it. I rock with the shower puff. It's good. I'm team shower puff. Soap on the body isn't as efficient. Doesn't lather up as well. So, and then I got to say this. I got this face cloth thing that my wife got me. You put your hands in these pockets, like your hands are up. And it's got these two little pouches where you put your fingers in, and it's like a face cloth. And I wash my face with that every day, before I moisturize, of course. And it's good; feels good on the face. So, there you go. Also, fish oil. Take fish oil, man. You got to take fish oil. B12s for energy. Fish oil, good multivitamin. That's what it's at.
Going hardcore here. I'm a soap on the body guy, but for a deep clean. I'm a soap on the rag / loofah / shower puff / whatever is needed in that regard. Not that I don't think soap on the body is a good clean. It's a solid clean, but a lot of times showers are quick. So a soap on the body with some solid body wash or something works pretty good for me. There's also this weird side of me that likes I'll give it a little bit of spice here. There's also this weird part of me that likes the cold body wash during the hot shower. Don't know what that says about me, but there we go. it's a quirky Sammy moment in the shower.
That's nice. The melding of the two sensations.
Yeah, it's almost the same as the cold pillow, right? The warm blankets, the cold sheets, the warm blankets, the cold pillow. When you get uncomfortable, you flip the pillow over, right? Right. I mean, we most of us do this, I think.
Incredible stuff. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. It's the comfort plus the, you know, the kind of shock of the cooling. And it, I don't know, just adds to the comfort to me. The other thing he said was Shaw Brothers or Warner Brothers. Now, this is probably a conversation that could go on for a long time. But I can already tell you that, you know, I love Shaw Brothers. I do. I love Shaw Brothers stuff. I know you do as well. But I think it's hard for the Shaw Brothers, and tastes vary. I think it's hard for Shaw Brothers to compete with Warner Brothers. This is my personal take. I mean, you think about the history of Warner Brothers. That's one of the most successful movie studios ever. And I don't even have time to look at how many films they put out in the last 100 years or however long they've been around, but it has to be close to that. Now, don't get me wrong. Shaw Brothers was prolific and awesome while it happened. And there's some masterpieces in there, no doubt, but I don't know. I think I got to take Warner Brothers in this case.
I think you do. I mean, The Shining, 2001.
Yeah, just the Kubrick. Yeah, the Kubrick stuff alone. You know, that's who you worked for, pretty much.
Yeah. So I think that's, yeah, I love Shaw Brothers as well. You know, Dirty Harry, Cool Hand Luke, on and on and on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love Shaw Brothers.
Yeah.
The Warner Brothers just.
The Titan. Yeah. The Titan, right? Yeah.
Kind of absolute hard, Titan.
Kind of hard to compete with Warner Brothers. Right. One more piece of feedback. I got to play this one this week because I just have to. This is from our good friend, the Red Waffle himself.
Yeah.
Here we go.
So, GGTMC.
He's back.
It has been years since I have left a voicemail. If you didn't know, it's Red Waffle Paul here. Reason I dial in is... I've been listening to the podcast a hell of a lot more. More recently, I've been getting into a routine of exercise and things like that that has allowed me to delve back into probably my favourite podcast of all time. The other thing is, I've had an absolute hectic last 6 months, but I had the absolute joy again of meeting up with Will in London when he came over in September. And his wonderful family. We met up for a meal. Andy Taylor Carr, Dave Macklemore, Andrew Kashif. It was just an absolutely amazing time. And I was trying to quantify how long I've been a member of this community for in my mind as I was listening to the Point Break episode recently. And I've guested on your show a couple of times, and Silver and Gold and Cult and Muscle and a podcast without Honour and Humanity, I think, and the one that Aaron and Chris did together. I can't remember the name. Mills Creeps, that was it. And to quantify how long you guys have been part of my life, I used to sneak them podcast recordings around my eldest son's sleep schedule. And the other night, he recommended a TV show to me called Snowfall. It's set in LA. It's about the crack pandemic, I believe, or the cocaine pandemic in the 80s, about somebody who makes a lot of money for himself doing that. I've only watched the one episode. But what quantified it was, within the first 10 minutes of that episode, there is a scene where someone is having cocaine sniffed from his ass. And it just hit me that my son's now old enough. Well, he's not really old enough to be watching that kind of stuff, but he's watching that kind of stuff. And that's how long I've been part of this wonderful community that stems back from you guys starting this podcast and then the Facebook group and things like that. And it just absolutely blew my mind. Just in terms of recent watches, I watched Zone of Interest recently. I know Will spoke about this last week. And yeah, it was the soundboard on it, more than anything else, is just probably the eeriest soundboard I've ever heard in a movie. And just the general mundaneness of everyday life as a Nazi, paralleled with that soundboard, it was definitely different. And I really, really enjoyed it. It's probably going to be in my top 10 for the year. It's absolutely superb. You motherfuckers complaining about 4 of yous going to the cinema. Add another 2 on that for me. I've got bloody bailiffs coming round to take the sofa away and my TV off my wall every time I take a cinema trip. It's that expensive for 6 of us. We are quite fortunate over here. My wife's training to be a mental health nurse, so because she's part of our health service, we do get a little bit of a discount at the cinema. But I completely agree with your sentiments that it is absolutely extortionate. And so the way we do it now is that if it's something that the kids want to go and watch, mm-hmm. one of us will take them rather than paying for 2 adult tickets.
Right.
And then myself and my wife may go on a couple of dates a year to the cinema to watch something we both like. But if there's something that we both individually want to want, we'll just go on our own. It's just the way you have to do things. I just want to say I'm really, really enjoying the show again and getting into this routine of regular listening. I absolutely love you guys. I love this podcast. I love the community, although I don't spend half as much time on Facebook as I used to, because I've got 4 kids. But there you go. Anyway, guys, keep up the great work. Congratulations just on... I know you took a break for a while from the podcast, but we'll just keep on going. I don't think you realise how you've touched people's lives. And that's the biggest compliment I can give you. Anyway, peace out, guys. See you later.
There he is, the wonderful voice of Red Waffle Paul. I haven't heard it in a while. It's good to hear him.
It's great to hear Rafifi.
Rafifi.
Our guy, man. Our main man.
Yeah.
I do want to make one small correction to his, before I forget.
Okay.
To his voicemail. So Davey Mac was not in King's Cross with us.
It would have been amazing.
It would have been amazing. Have Davey squared with Davey Mac and the mighty Alcock. But it was Davey Alcock.
Yes.
I'll attribute that to it probably being wee hours of the morning. He was probably on the way to the gym, like 5 a.m., going to grind one out.
Yes.
That was amazing. It was good. Paul's got to get back on the show, man.
Yeah,
he's
got to get back on the show. Yeah,
we'll has he been on since Blue Velvet, do you know?
I don't know. It's a good question. It's a great question, and not one I'm going to be able to answer quickly.
Paul, put down the can of Pabst. Come home, baby.
I had a Pabst this past week. It's delicious.
BST?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't had one in forever, man.
They hit right, man. They hit right when, you know.
I was like, what are those like nowadays? Boom. I opened it up. 24 ounce. Big can. I was like, damn. That is not bad for what you're paying for. That is not bad.
No, but it hits a spot.
Hits a spot, yeah.
Opera was onto something, man.
Yeah.
Booth, Frank Booth was onto something. Yes.
But thanks, Paul, as always. And man.
Much love, buddy.
Yeah, much love. And cocaine snorting off the... I mean, if there's a GGTMC thing, a hobby that is on the dark side, that is definitely it.
Literally. Yeah, railing lines out of someone's asshole. You got to snort it up fast. You got to be like a hungry hippo before that gets down in there, man.
Well, yeah. I mean that membrane down there sucks that stuff up pretty quick, too. I mean, really, you're helping your partner because, you know, you could OD or something. You got to get in there and get a good whiff.
Hey, like Kool and the Gang said, you got to get down on it, man.
And he's not wrong. Yeah, taking a family of six to the theaters. Oof. Man, I'm sorry.
That's a bruiser, bud.
That is a bruiser. But good on him to get creative. That's what I do. If one of the kids doesn't want to go, I'm like, you sure you want to go? You know? You hate to be that way, but, you know, it's like, eh. If they don't want to go, I'm like, ah, good. That's 10 or 15 bucks I don't have to spend. And plus another concessions, another 20 bucks I don't have to spend.
For real, man.
You hate to be that way, but that's what it's come to. Anyway, thanks again, Paul. We appreciate the voicemail.
Yeah, thank you.
Love you deeply. And thanks for the kind words. Thanks for the kind words, as always. It's always nice to hear that, too, you know, being a big part of people's lives. I mean, there's some people that have had children that are younger than our podcast, including us. So it's always amazing to hear these stories. All right, let's get into what we've been watching. What you got, man?
I got some stuff. Let me go to my list here.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'd want to give everybody a heads up because we are behind. We're trying to crank two episodes out and trying to be tight today, so we'll see what happens. We're not as tight as the guy who's getting the cocaine sniffed out of his or, you know, snorted out
of his. He better be, or that is a net loss.
Or the girl, whatever you're into.
Yeah.
I got to say, that's, I don't know, out of the ass or on the ass. That's two different levels of a relationship there.
It is.
Yeah.
This one definitely is.
Yeah, I just want to mention that right off the top. I mean, you can't automatically, if you're going to do that, you can't go automatically to the
hall. That's a real power move. That's a boom or bust move right there, man.
Yeah, you're really making a strong, forgive my words,
of intent.
Assumption.
Yeah.
To
you
do
sure
that.
Are, man. You sure are. You better be prepared for that. Yeah. Or maybe you're the one.
It has ramifications either way. I'll just say that. Afterwards, the conversation could be awkward or incredibly hot. You could go for a twofer.
You may be the sniffy, though.
Yes. Yeah. You may not be prepared. You may have went into the situation thinking you're going to take control of this.
The sniffer.
And next thing you know, you're the sniffy. And you're wait a minute. Power maybe play.
You better keep that tight and winking, man. Winking just right. Some for me, some for them. But moving on from this, because my kids have tried listening to my show a little bit. And I did. Yeah, I'm going to job this one like a hot potato.
Yeah.
I had our youngest, who's 13, he was listening to some of our Shocker episode. And
yeah.
They look for films he knows, right, that we've talked about.
Yeah.
And I said to him the thing you and I have talked about, the beautiful thing of long after you and I are gone,
yes,
our children will have thousands of hours of us talking about them. Of them popping up on the show now and then, of us talking about the things we enjoyed with them, the little things in their lives, as well as just talking about something that we both deeply love, which is why we're doing it here almost 16 years later.
Yeah, it's crazy. They'll never never be without hearing us in some way. That's insane to think about. It's a legacy, really.
It definitely is. It definitely is. Did I talk about The Truman Show or Lisa Frankenstein in the last episode? Do you remember?
Yes, I think you talked about both.
Okay, good. So they've been getting to the March. Martin, did I talk about Poor Things?
No. And I also saw Poor Things, so I can talk about this a little bit.
Poor Things. So Yorgos Lanthimos. So I remember seeing the trailer for this, and I love Yorgos. I'd say he's like probably like a top five, definitely top 10 favorite working filmmaker for me today. I haven't seen The Favorite yet. It's eluded me, but I've seen everything else. I love him. I love his sensibilities. Some people feel quirky just to be quirky. I never get that vibe from him.
It seems like
some people do it just to be weird. That's not him. He has a different way of seeing things.
I know people have made this comparison, but it's actually true. He's kind of a mix of Stanley Kubrick and Tim Burton to me. And I honestly don't think Tim Burton is quirky to be commercial either.
No,
I think that's who he is.
That's his worldview. That's his lens.
Yeah. And this film, more than any other Lanthimos film, felt a little bit Tim Burtonish, but
totally.
I don't think he tries to be quirky. I think he just can be quirky.
I think there's a sincerity to what he does that really rings true. So I remember seeing the trailer for this one, and I'll be honest, if this wasn't Yorgos Lanthimos, even though I love all the principles in it, the trailer doesn't really do it any justice. But then again, there's so much they can't show in the trailers that's in the film.
This is very heavily adult themed in a lot of ways.
Very much an adult film. So we talked about Emma Stone winning the Hardware at the Oscars. You take that for what it is, right? That's not the benchmark, but it's always, as we say, it's always nice for people we love to get recognized because that leads to other creative freedoms for them.
Yeah. I haven't seen all the performances that were nominated, but I'll just say that she deserved it.
She was real good. Real good. That's a really brave, like a really honest, intense performance. And it's just flat out a great performance.
Yeah. Right? She's not to use the word, but she's very exposed in the film.
She certainly is. She's lovely in it. Willem Dafoe, as always, is lovely in it. Mark Ruffalo, man.
Ruffalo
is up for supporting actor. He's so good in this film. Dude,
he made me laugh so hard in this movie.
He did.
There are some moments when his face is the faces he makes because he is the ultimate cuckold. I mean, this is...
Oh, man. Is he ever? He's the magnificent cuckold.
There are so many moments of frustration for him here that are amazing that I'd laugh just thinking about the faces he makes.
Yeah, and his comedic timing is incredible in this.
Yes, it is. He is the comedic tone of the film, and he's pretty amazing.
You know who I'd like to see work with Lanthimos is Christoph Waltz.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised he hasn't yet.
They would be good. And Remy Youssef, who, to be honest, I wasn't overly familiar with. I think he's really delightful in the film. So the film on the whole, really loved it. It would probably make my top 10 of the year, I think. Like if we were doing like the old days where we were deep diving, it would probably make my top 10.
I think it probably would make mine too. It's certainly transgressive. It's certainly, we're not going to go into detail here because there's more to the film than just the shock value and the excessive amount of sex and nudity. Well, yeah, that and the progression of the female character is very interesting. It's it's actually quite political of a film, and I did not expect that. And
it definitely is.
I quite enjoyed it. I really did. Visually, it's stunning, odd, and again, like the word I used at the beginning, I mean, that's the best word I can use to describe it, but... never so odd that it took me out of the film. The weirdest thing about the movie, and this is all I'll say about it, and then we can move on to the next thing. It's interesting that the music almost sounds broken like she is in the beginning.
Yeah, and then, of course.
As the film moves along, the music becomes more of your standard sound. Mm-hmm. It almost sounds like the music is tuning while giving us a score.
I wouldn't doubt that with Lanthimos. He's pretty
Yeah, clearly these guys were thinking.
He's in control, yeah. Right?
He knows what he's doing. It sounds like this like instrument's tuning, but it has a sound, and then as the movie goes along, the music gets more and more not standard, that's not the right word, but just more in tune.
It's fine-tuned. It doesn't sound as warbly and kind of disjointed as things go on.
Kind of goes along with her character, right? Because her character's ill-tuned and then becomes fine-tuned.
Oh, yeah.
Very interesting. But, I had a great time with it. I will say this, though, Will. I think that film might be too long.
It's probably about... You know what's weird? Where it loses gas for me is when... I don't want to spoil it, but there's a reveal towards the back end of the film.
Yes.
And then she has to kind of live through that reveal.
Yes.
As do we as the audience. I feel like that stuff could have been completely cut out.
I totally agree with you.
So that take out about 20 minutes of it, and there's the sweet spot.
And it's about 2 hours and 20 something minutes. So there you go. I agree with you.
Yeah, that's a long one.
Yeah, it was a lot longer than I expected. So
definitely. Next up for us was one my wife wanted to watch. This was one of those ones where I talked about this with our older son the other day because he's dating a girl. She's lovely, and I think we watched a trailer for I think the new Crow or something.
Oh, yeah, the new Crow. That's right.
Yeah. And he goes, I said, yeah, but hey, maybe she's going to want to watch it. And I said, this might be one of those where you it's her pick, quote unquote, but you don't mind watching it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, my wife wanted to watch Argyle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is your Crow. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, my girl Dua Lipa's in it. But this has a great cast. Henry Cavill, Bryce Dallas Howard, Sam Rockwell, Bryan Cranston, who just post Breaking Bad, I don't know, done a lot of questionable things. Catherine O'Hara, John Cena, Sam Jackson.
Yeah.
And Matt, I don't know if I mentioned this, Matthew Vaughn, who's a director I think is talented. I like the Kingsman films and Layer Cake and whatnot. But I'll tell you, the more he goes along, the bigger budgets he gets, the more slick his films look, but the less heart and brains they have.
Well, I totally agree with you. As having this conversation with some other friends of the show, I don't know if I've liked Matthew Vaughn hardly at all outside of Layer Cake. There's something about his films that feel really empty to me, and I don't know what it is. I mean, I like The Kingsman, the first one, a little bit.
Yes.
But most of his stuff, even when I see the trailers, I'm like, I don't want to see that.
So, yeah, this one was not good.
Yeah, I don't have any plans on ever watching this film.
No, this is like, and I'll tell you, Henry Cavill has the worst haircut in the history of...
Even worse.
Well, maybe not the worst. It's not worse than...
Thulsa Dooms? I mean, you know.
It's not even in that... I don't know why I even said that. Come on, Dooms got him lapped. But it's a pretty terrible haircut. This one, it just... It felt like one of those that I had started to have sort of this open disdain for when I was watching it because I'm like... This is what's wrong, and I hate to sound it because people can like what they can like. It's just my opinion, but
yeah.
It's like this is what's wrong. Like this film probably cost I don't know $100 million, and this is what we're getting.
Yeah,
this is getting a huge push from studio, got a lot of talented people involved, and this is what they shit out. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I get it; it's subjective, and you can have fun with it. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm by no means a tastemaker or It doesn't matter what I think, but just my opinion is I think Vaughn's a talented filmmaker, and I've seen a lot of things become excessively hollow. They're the classic sort of chocolate Easter bunny we talk about, right? Where they look fine, they look nice, but there's just absolutely nothing on the inside.
Right. So yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, he has films I like. I mean, I like Layer Cake probably the most, but I like the first Kingsman. I like the first Kingsman film.
Yeah,
I think I saw the second one. I can remember hardly anything about it and never went back. One of the X-Men films he did was pretty good. I liked it, but that's about it. I know some people are fans of Stardust, I think, and some other things, but I don't know, man. He just doesn't – he's just a filmmaker that doesn't speak to me. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Next up was a filmmaker that really speaks to me. It's Ari Aster.
Oh, there.
And this is a bit of a brave one, but we decided to do a family watch of Bo is Afraid.
which I talked about last time we recorded, right? I watched that.
Yeah, so I think that kind of put the vibe out there. And, you know, William and I had seen it in theaters. And we wanted to drop it on.
I mean, it's family entertainment if there ever was one.
Absolutely. There's a few scenes I had to try to explain.
Well, I mean, I think we should warn folks, it's not a family film at all, but, you know,
by any measure,
depending on, you know, how you see, you know, every family is their own. That's what I'll
say. Yes. Just know that there are some sex scenes and some very awkward things.
And a very strange possession like weird moment toward the end in the attic that I still don't know. I know it means something, but wow.
I'll tell you what. You know what that feels like to me? That's a total riff on Zulofsky's Possession.
Yeah, that's what I said. I mean, that's what it feels like. Yeah.
And it feels very much, yeah. So that's, and in fact, I even said that to my kids. I said, this is kind of a riff on that. And also a riff on the mother's perception of her husband. You know, it's that old saying of, you know, he's just a dick with legs.
And, yeah, perception of men in general, I'd say, yes.
Yeah. Oh, I would say so. Precisely with that character, the Lupone character. But I'll say this. Listen, that and sort of the wild scene with Parker Posey aside, which I still have trouble navigating through mentally or emotionally myself, I think there's a lot to love here. And I think for a family that, you know, like ours, you know, we watch some stuff, we like to talk about it. We all love Joaquin Phoenix. I feel my kids getting deeper and deeper into film, and I like talking about this and talking about, you know, Astor. They love Astor. They've seen all of his films. So I loved it, man. It was a great rewatch. I still feel that this one kind of loses its footing at the end. Like, I'm watching it and I remember giving it like an 8.25, and
yes.
And then I feel like that last, like when he gets back home and all that stuff happens, it almost kind of gets lost in the weeds for me where it,
yeah.
Instead of going to like an 8.5 or, you know, around there, it kind of stays that 8.25 for me.
Yeah, it's an 8 territory for me too. It's definitely never going to be 9 territory because it's too long.
No, it's too long. And I think just some of it is just a little too incoherent for me personally.
Yeah. I don't even know if it, there's parts of it that are incoherent. And there's also parts of it that are almost too on the nose, but it's certainly a unique film and I'll give it credit for that. I mean, film I watched last year even comes close to being like that movie.
Did you see the cast he's got lined up for his new Western?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, my.
Yeah, could be very interesting.
Yes. Oh, my. Very good. So, no, he's a unique voice in film. He's vital. Speaking of him and Lanthimos, apparently they interviewed each other for some film site or something. I got to listen to that. Yeah. That'd be a fascinating conversation.
I'm sure it would, yeah.
What else? Here's another one. So, William with his great son, not me, the windfall of picks he got from our NFL playoff family pool, wanted to watch Memories of Murder.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my guys love Bong Joon-ho.
Which we reviewed about 2 years ago, roughly.
Gosh, has it been that long?
Yeah, it's been a while, man.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Wow.
I'll go back and look. I got the spreadsheet up here.
I would have said about a year.
It was toward the beginning of 2023. So, yeah, you're right. About a year. Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. Whew. A little over, though. But anyway.
Yeah, so it looks like about February of last year.
Okay. So, yeah, about a year.
January, February, somewhere in there.
Now and then the fish oil kicks in. Bong Joon-ho. So, my guys love him. They love Song Kang-ho. They love this. This absolutely blew them. There's one scene with an extraction from one of the victims, and so that stuff's a little uncomfortable. But listen, you know, we're talking about something. I think, you know, it's difficult. It's going to vary by what you want to expose your kids to. Obviously, I'm okay to expose them to some things if I'm there to give them the context and walk through stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to show them Gaspar Noé films anytime soon. We're not going to watch Bad Lieutenant anytime soon.
Look,
we're not going to watch
I'll say this,
in the Realm of the Senses.
I'll say this to everybody. How you raise your children is your choice.
That's right. That's right.
If you choose not to show them things, that's your choice. I don't judge one way or the other.
No, you got to do what feels right. But we loved this film. It was a great watch with them. They were blown away. And I wondered if it would kind of be a bit, you know, it's a long film.
It is. Unlike the other films we talked about, I don't think it. I don't think you can remove anything from that one.
No.
I think it works. Yeah.
No, you can't. And I'll tell you what, man. I watched the film, and I've seen this film, I don't know, 3 times now, and maybe 4. And that final shot.
Yeah.
just sent chills down my spine.
Yeah, that's a great
again.
It's a great movie.
And then so I couldn't wait for that moment. I sat there for. I said, "Hey guys, I want to explain this last shot to you. What the intent is, and to me, the beauty in that of me being able to talk about the intent of a filmmaker and talk about the realities around this case and stuff. It's such a joy, right? Like you and I kind of spoke about this briefly off the air. Just being able to do things with our kids, you know, it's very cool. Last one I'll talk about is this was one. So our oldest is out with his girlfriend a lot. The missus has been picking up some work while she's in school. So it gives us a chance to just watch, you know, horror and anime stuff. And, you know, because our youngest is into anime stuff. We watched one called Tekken King Crete.
Okay.
Which this one's a bit far out. It looked like it was going to be one thing based on the cover. It's a lot darker than that. But these two kids in this city, I think it's called Treasure City. And it's about them trying to kind of defend their city from the Yakuza and these people who want to kind of take it over and ruin it. It's got some very surreal, fantastical elements. The animation style is beautiful. It looks like it's very hand-drawn. We enjoyed it. We enjoyed it. It's different. I think it's a little incoherent for me, but he agreed. But yeah, it was an interesting watch for sure. So nice. I'll leave it at that.
Nice. Good deal. I like that he likes the horror and the anime. I wonder what will come out of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I've said on the show before, just to kind of see some stuff they both dig, some yeah. stuff. Like William's more into like the, he really digs Rocky and kind of the underdog stuff, whereas our youngest, Braden's more, he digs animated stuff and he likes getting into some of the junky horror stuff
nice.
More than William does at this point. So it's cool to see where their roads converge and where they kind of fork in the road, right?
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Which is inevitable. That's what happens. So
yeah, for sure.
Watched a few things. I watched a little movie called Oppenheimer. You may have heard of this.
Oh, yes.
Kind of. Yeah. I enjoyed Oppenheimer. I mean, of the Best Picture nominees that I saw, it wasn't my favorite film, but I totally get why it was selected to win Best Picture and stuff. There's a lot of discourse now talking about it, but it's still, I don't know if it's my favorite of the Nolan films, but it's certainly high up for him. I like it better when he doesn't spend as much time explaining himself. He does still do that here a little bit, but at least the performance is really good. And I do, even though I did love Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers, and I really thought nobody could beat him in that performance, because I think it honestly is one of the great American performances of the last 5 years or so. Cillian Murphy is amazing in this film.
He is. He was deserving of the award, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah. He is amazing in the film. He does a lot. He's always had amazing eyes and an amazing face anyway. But here he's given a lot to lift, and I think he carries the movie wonderfully. And I was really impressed with him. All the acting is really good in the film, although I had some issues. Some of the Emily Blunt stuff is very broad and very
I agree with you. Odd. I do find it some of it very broad.
Very odd in tone. Like, I don't know what he's going for there. But anyway, a lot of great cameos, obviously, and a lot of great performances from actors we haven't seen in a long time. The only one I want to mention that, you know, everybody's kind of mentioned this, so I'm not really new to the game or anything here. But, wow, good to see Josh Hartnett again and actually, you know, pretty good in the film. So
putting in some work. He's had a bit of a renaissance. He was in that film with that Guy Ritchie film. He's kind of fun in that, the Ruse de Guerre one.
So I guess he's getting
he's got a kind of a fun performance in that. And yeah, so it's, you know, it's cool. I saw him on, you know, Letterboxd does that little segment on Instagram, your four favorites. And he actually had a pretty good four favorites, man. I was like, oh shit, Josh.
Yeah, you. I'm saying this right now, and I've been saying this for years. Jan Michael Vincent biopic, Josh Hartnett.
Oh, dude, yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying. I mean, Jan Michael Vincent had a hell of a story, so I don't know if anybody would ever make that, but even if a low-budget guy is listening right now, think about it. And just think about it, because he gives me Jan Michael Vincent vibes.
Totally, man. Good call.
Yeah, but anyway, I liked Oppenheimer quite a bit. I won't comment on the length of the film. I think the point of the film is for it to be an epic and everything else, so, I mean, I have my problems with it and whatnot, but I do think it struggles a little bit on the back end once it gets to the point of the climax, which is obviously a bomb, but I do still think there's some very interesting stuff in here. and some interesting human dynamics. So I did quite enjoy it. I guess the best way to say is I don't think it's a great film, but I think it's a very good film. I'll put it that way. As we speak, Rap Music on Trial. I'll watch this. This is pretty interesting. Again, I'm not a big, especially modern, I'm not a big modern hip-hop guy. But I find it interesting that there's rap is kind of going through, or at least it has for the last 5 or 10 years, or maybe even a little bit longer. Kind of the same kind of mirrored things that heavy metal went through back in the 80s when I was a kid. And how, you know, people are trying to censor them by prosecuting, saying you can't say this, saying it's causing people to kill people, it's causing people to do this. All throughout history, we've written stories, told stories, done everything. But when something comes along that makes people uncomfortable, they want to censor it and shut it down. Obviously, this has the other element to it, which is minority-based. And that also raises some flags. But the thing is, you know, it kind of goes back to my thing, you know, whether I like it or not. Again, I don't like music with the use of the N-words excessively in it. It's not my thing. It makes me uncomfortable, makes me feel bad. But you know what? They have every fucking right to say it. So that's my, you know, I say it every week. If they want to say it, fucking say it. That's what this country's all about. So I totally agree with that aspect of it. And I don't think it's damaging the youth. I think that falls on us as parents and people. I don't think that has anything to do with the artiste. So there you go. Very interesting. Not a great documentary, but interesting to say the least. Suitable Flesh. I watched this one. This is directed by Joe Lynch, Heather Graham, Barbara Crampton. Pretty good film for what it is. It's a horror film. It's a Lovecraftian type jam a little bit. Got some interesting elements. I don't think it's altogether successful, but it's interesting. It's interesting to see Heather Graham in a heavy role again. She really hasn't done a whole lot where she's the lead.
No, I know. You and I talked about that a few times when we revisited things from the late 90s, early 2000s. What was the name of this one again?
Suitable Flesh. It's on Shudder.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, it's very, it's kind of sexual heavy, so just kind of give you a heads up on that.
Oh, then I will probably avoid.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little sexually heavy.
With, I mean, not for me. I will avoid it with.
Yeah, yeah.
Family movie night.
Hey, guys, let's get together.
Yeah, let's get awkward together. Let's all look at our phones when this happens.
Got quiet in the room. But it was decent. I wouldn't say amazing, but pretty good. Not bad. Finally watched. I'll go ahead and knock both of these out since I watched the other one yesterday. Watched the It films. I finally watched them, believe it or not.
Oh.
I had never seen them. And the first It came out 7 years ago. That's also insane.
That is.
So I watched both of those. Well, I mean, the other one came out 5 years ago. I enjoyed the first It. It's pretty good. I had some, you know, some quibbles with it and stuff, but for the most part, it's pretty good. And it's got some pretty good.
It is pretty solid.
Yeah, it's pretty good and very stylized. And I like Muschietti? 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 Something like Andy Muschietti. I don't know. I think it's how you say his name. I think he's Argentinian. But so his name sounds Italian, though. I like his.
Muschietti?
Yeah, yeah. I like his visual style. It's very slick and nice. And, you know, he directed Mama and a few other things. He's definitely got a look. And he's got some, you know, talent, no doubt. But I did like it, the first one, a little bit more. The second one is an odd movie in a way. It is, first of all, 3 hours long. Big red flag right off the bat, right? My son and I fired it up, and I knew this, but he fired it up, and he's like, 3 hours? And I'm like, oh, yeah, man. Here we go. Did you ever see the second one?
No, man. We wanted to, but we just never did.
All right, so I'll keep it light on things just in case. But I got to tell you, the second one is interesting because it has really great moments, but really low lows. So it's really uneven. And I just don't know where it kind of lost its way. But what it really feels like is it feels like they made a sequel to a successful film. And they did that because the first one made a ton of money, if you remember. They made this sequel, and now it's like, let's explain everything ad nauseum.
Oh, man.
And like a TV show, right? Like, you know, it's like at that. watching the second one, I'm like, why didn't they just go ahead and make a TV show? Only to find out that they are making a TV show of this called Welcome to Derry or whatever, which is, I think, it's like a prequel type to the whole thing. So there you go. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, well, this would make a better TV show than it would make a film. And they're doing that. So
I'm interested in that because there's a lot of folklore there with the creature and the town and stuff that King spoke about in the book and that's alluded to in the TV and film. So, I'll watch that. That may be a good one with the family if it doesn't shit the bed. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. But, It won better than It 2. But, you know, I'm glad I watched them. Let's put it that way.
Nice. Yeah, they're solid, man. You can do worse. We're in a good era for horror, man. Let no one say, you know, horror is not like it used to be. No, there's a lot of fantastic horror being made.
Yeah. I think also the problem I have with the second one is it's very CGI heavy. And not that I have a problem with CGI, I really don't, but it's very CGI heavy compared to the first one.
Yeah.
Checked out Deliverance again. I watched that for a Not a Bomb Classic. You can check out my review of that.
Ooh, hang on.
Yeah. Yeah. What he's have no idea what he's doing, but it sounds pretty serious. The ooh, it sounded like it was hoping everything's okay. But yeah, you can check out the Not a Bomb Classics review to hear my thoughts on Deliverance. No need to kind of go into it here. And that's it this week for what we've been watching. So let's move along here. You know what time? Go ahead.
I was going to say, Sammy, you know, our guy Bert's real prepared in that film.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Got that wetsuit. You know, he's good. Doesn't have a mustache, but that's okay. I wonder, though, he's in the water a lot. Did he have a waterproof watch on?
I seriously doubt it. In 71, 72.
I doubt that, too, man. If he did, he could have asked the people in the woods, do you know what time it is?
What time is it?
Time for this or that.
Oh boy, here we go. Press the play button there, Rick. There you go. Come on. Come on. There it goes. All right. The better question is do the two guys in the forest have any this or that's for us?
Man, I don't want to know they're this or that. I don't think there's much choice being given to us.
There definitely wasn't a choice given to Ned Beatty. Beatty didn't get a choice.
He did not get a choice.
Mm. Yikes. All right, what do you got, man? We'll try to keep it tight this week.
We'll keep it to a fiver. All right. I don't know if I've done this one. Have I done soft pretzel or chocolate-covered almonds?
Yeah, I think we have. Yes.
Okay, that's just those things are always on my mind. So,
yeah.
Okay, next one.
Yes.
Helen Mirren or Liz Taylor?
I'm gonna stick with Helen Mirren on this one. I do like Liz Taylor a lot, though. I'm one of those ones.
Identikit, man. Yeah, I like an Identikit era Liz Taylor.
Yeah, you know, I always liked her. I mean, she's a real natural beauty. There's really nobody that has ever really, to me, kind of looked like Liz Taylor, really. So, but you know, Helen Mirren, not just, you know, modern hair, Helen Mirren, everybody talks about how great she looks at the age she is now, but she's always been a beauty as well. So, and, both of them are, naturally beautiful women, but I'm gonna go with Helen Mirren. Might be the English accent. Maybe. I don't know.
Olivier Gruner. Is it Gruner or Grunier? I can't remember now. Well, I put an I in Olivier.
Is it Oliver? Grunier or Olivier?
Might be an me. It's Olivier Gruner or Gruner. There it is. French commando and actor. Olivier Gruner or Billy Blanks?
Oh. That one's a little tougher than anticipated. Oh. I'm going to go Billy Blanks on this one.
Nice.
I've seen more Billy Blank stuff, to be honest. I've seen a lot of Grenier stuff, but I don't know. I think Blanks has got a little bit more of a personality.
Brother, you took the words out of my mouth. That's why I'm going Blanks. He's got a little more je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, kind of underrated a little bit, Billy Blanks.
Yeah, he's fun, man. He's funny. He can play the heavy. He can be the good guy. He can be the sidekick.
Yeah. I mean, he's not amazing, right? But I mean,
he's good, though. He's fun.
As a B-movie actor. Yeah, as a B-movie actor, he's fun.
Damn, he's good, yeah. Hey, let's give Billy Blank some flowers on a Sunday, man. Doesn't get enough love. I might have done this one before. Tetsuya Nakadai or Toshiro Mifune?
We may have done that one before. Okay. I can't remember, but it's for me, it's Mifune all day.
It is for me as well. And I know Nakadai is amazing, but I got to go Mifune. What's that, three? Okay, I'm going to give you two more quick ones here. George Hilton or Giuliano Gemma?
Man, these guys are very similar in some ways, you know?
Almost, dude, I know.
Almost to the point where they almost look alike.
I know.
Which is really interesting. But I think the only difference is Gemma didn't typically wear a mustache. Hilton wore a mustache a little bit more.
Although Gemma does wear a mustache in Uppercut Man.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called, Uppercut Man?
Yeah, yeah. Uppercut Man, where he plays a heavy.
He is the heavy.
Yeah, which is oddly not his forte, to get back to our Grenier.
That's right.
I kind of like Uppercut. I mean, I need to rewatch that. I remember being kind of indifferent to Uppercut Man, but I kind of liked it.
It's fun. It's got a Sunday afternoon quality to it.
Yeah, yeah. It's not amazing. Doesn't have the kind of balls-to-the-wall madness of some Italian films, but
it's quaint. I think it's very quaint.
Yeah, it's kind of a safe Italian film. I'm going to go Gemma because I'm a spaghetti Western fan, and he's pretty much the spaghetti Western guy that nobody, I mean, everybody talks about, but I mean, I think he did more than anybody as far as the Westerns go. Yeah, as far as the Westerns go. And I like him. I like him. I think he's got the qualities. That's not taking anything away from George Hilton. George Hilton's amazing and a part of our show and our lives. But yeah, I'm going to go with Gemma.
I'm going to take the opposite approach. I like both. I'm going to go with Hilton, though. His work in the Jolly of yesteryear just put him over the top for me. He did do some fun Westerns, Sartana and a couple other ones. Any Gun Can Play. Actually, doesn't have both. I was thinking of Day of Anger. I was mixing up Day of Anger, which is the Gemma Lee Van Cleef one, right?
Yeah, is it Gemma? Yeah, that might be, yeah.
I feel like Gemma plays like the wide-eyed kid.
Well, there's one that John Philip Law plays the wide-eyed kid. It's Death Rides a Horse. But
yes, which I love, which is also Lee Van Cleef. That's an all-time favorite theme, man. I love the theme for that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm gonna go Hilton. I think he rocked the ascot and the tinted sunglasses a little better than Gemma. Although Gemma's got that great performance, A Man on His Knees.
Yeah, Day of Anger is Gemma, and it is a little bit of the kind of the same. It's the same type of thing as Death Rides a Horse. I think Death Rides a Horse nails that theme a little bit better, but Day of Anger is also pretty great.
You know what, man? I was gonna go Hilton, but Gemma in Damiani's A Man on His Knees, which we've covered on the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right.
What a fucking performance. I'm going to stick with now Gemma.
Nice.
On the strength of that performance.
Nice. Yeah, there we go. I think his fan base has grown over the years, really.
Yeah, he's got some good stuff. It comes down to that thing. Like, you know, he was an avatar because of his look and everything and played a certain kind of role a lot. But when he was asked to do some heavy lifting in the right context, he was good, man. He's really good in that film.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right, that's it, man.
That's it. All right. Is that five? I guess it's five. Who cares?
That five?
I think we're going with it.
We'll roll with it, man. Cut it, print it.
Cut it, print. Moving on. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and discuss Murphy's War from 1971. We'll be back right after this.
Time to check.
Everything he does seems to come out right. All right. So you might think to yourself, what does that song have to do with Murphy's War? Well, absolutely nothing. But except that, you know, kind of jokingly, I told Will behind the scenes that it seems like Peter O'Toole is putting things back together with rubber bands and popsicle sticks and just about anything else he can find in this film.
Daddy of MacGyver.
Yes. He's being as creative as he possibly can, considering what he's been given. So this is Murphy's War, 1971, directed by one Peter Yates, who made a little film. And well, I mean, we've done him before. He's been on the show before with Robbery, right? We did that film. He also made a few other great films, in my opinion. Breaking Away, Krull. Breaking Away would be fun to cover someday.
It's a good one.
Yeah, that really is. Good father-son dynamic in that one. Mm-hmm. But he made some other stuff that we just haven't gotten to, I think. But Friends of Eddie Coyle was a big one, obviously.
Which,
for yeah,
massive one for us. Bullet,
yeah. Which I don't think we've ever covered Bullet.
No, Bullet's fun. I talked about it recently with the Lettieri rib bone sucking sleaze. Yeah. Good Lord, I felt dirty just watching that.
Yeah. Greasy.
Greasy, man.
But
Mother Jugs and Speed.
Yeah, Mother Jugs and Speed. That's another one that we could cover.
The Hot Rock. That's a really fun kind of heist comedy film. He's got a lot of good stuff in his filmography.
He does. He does a lot of good stuff, I think. And this is one that's kind of underseen in his filmography. I'll talk about the kind of the background of the film when we get to it here. But this stars Peter O'Toole. Plot synopsis: a lone survivor from a British naval ship is obsessed with getting revenge on a German U-boat crew that massacred his shipmates in the water. So, like I said, Peter O'Toole stars in the film. Cian Phillips, who is his then wife, she's the female lead. Philippe Noiret, who most people probably know from Cinema Paradiso at this point, but a great character actor from France.
Oh man, one of the all-time favorite. He has so many great films in his filmography.
Yeah, great face. I guess the best way to describe it is kind of a, I don't know, kind of a everyman, kind of a, I guess the word might be hangdog.
Yeah, a bit of a hangdog. He's a big man, kind of a burly, gentle giant with a hangdog face and a great mustache.
Yeah, very warm face in a way, right? So
yeah, big time. And also Zazie, right? He's the uncle in Zazie dans le Metro.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, he's in The Big Feast.
Yeah, he's in a lot of great stuff. Horst Janssen is the heavy here as the German U-boat captain, which...
Yeah.
yeah, he's done a lot of stuff. Horst Janssen, and I believe he's still working to this day. He is. He's doing TV. He's in a show called The Privilege. And there we go. It's on Netflix, evidently. How about that? So we can still see Horst Janssen working today.
Wow.
I can't remember. I feel like he was in another film we talked about, but I can't remember what it is. I know him mostly from Captain Kronos Vampire Hunter. But I think, and I might be wrong about this, isn't he wasn't he like a German pop star too or something like that?
I don't know about that, but that sounds incredible.
Yeah, I feel like he did something else, you know, because he's a good looking dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to look through and see. I don't know enough to know. He enjoys sailing on his IMDb trivia.
Yeah, he said it takes him away.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that. Yes, Christopher Cross humor and the
Christopher Cross on a Sunday, man.
Truly in true dad form, we got Christopher Cross humor. Like, you know, only so many people are going to get that. Anyway, so I'd seen this before a long time ago. I hadn't seen it in a while. It used to be on cable TV quite a bit, and I was a big Peter O'Toole fan. I think he's one of the great movie stars, but. As great as Lawrence of Arabia is, he kind of went through a phase where he did some stuff that he was critically acclaimed for, but nothing that was really huge. It's like he couldn't really pick anything. He just went through some rough times, let's put it that way. And if you know anything about Peter O'Toole, he's a bit of a hellraiser behind the scenes. You know, he liked to drink. He liked to party. But some of the stuff he picked after Lawrence of Arabia was not well received, although I think there's some great stuff in there. What did you think? I think this is the first time you've seen this.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be happy to get into it. I don't want to sidebar for too long, but I do want to take an opportunity. You mentioned Noiré. He's one of two principal co-stars on sort of the face side of things, the good side of things. I can't express my love for him enough. And there's one film I just want to quickly mention here. I haven't had a chance to stump for this one because we haven't done like our top 30 first-time watches in forever. But he had done a film. It was on Criterion Channel. I don't know if it still is. It was, and it was, I think, like my top two or three first-time watches the year it came out, like top five for sure. It's called The Clockmaker of St. Paul.
Oh, yeah,
it's a Bertrand Tavernier film.
I've not seen it, but I know what you're talking about.
Man, I mean, this film, actually, I think it was my third favorite film, first-time watch of 2021.
Nice.
Only behind Tempopo and Bamboozled.
Oh, good deal.
So anyway, this film is tremendous. A watchmaker finds out one day that his son has become a murderer. He tries to understand for whom and why. Fantastic film. So I just want to stump for that quick. I don't want to sidebar for too long. So you're right. I had never seen this film. I'd never even heard of it.
Arrow's
putting out some stuff that, you know, good on them. As we've always said, they're a wonderful label. It's interesting to see them branch out into stuff like this. That's kind of some underseen studio stuff that has a lot of great principles involved. You know, you mentioned names like Yates. We mentioned the stars, Noiré, of course, O'Toole and Phillips. Sterling Siliphant wrote this.
Mm-hmm.
Douglas Holcomb was involved, of course. There's a lot of good people behind the camera here. And what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say something about Doug Holcomb. That it's interesting. I know that he's one of those DPs that you know, some DPs will work really long and hard to get a shot right, but he would be one of those guys that could do it by eye, which is not really that common. And kind of interesting because this film looks pretty good.
It does look good, and I think there would have been a lot of inherent challenges shooting on a spot. A lot of locations, a lot of sun exposure, right? Because it's on this island.
And it's in Venezuela,
Yeah, and I think they even used the Venezuelan army. There's a thank you, I think, to the Venezuelan army or the Navy or the something towards the end of the film, if memory serves. But if you don't know Holcomb's name, you know his work. You know, he shot the Raiders films, the Indiana Jones films, Sailor Who Fell from Grace with the Sea, you know, a lot of stuff in the 70s, Rollerball.
Yeah.
you know, the Italian Job.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Vampire Killers Robbery. So Yates liked to use him.
Yeah. He's kind of undersung in a weird way. Like his name doesn't come up much, but he shot a lot of great stuff.
Yeah. He definitely has. So the film looks really good. But I feel like, you know, I put this film on. I'd never heard of it. The great thing about doing the show, you and I, you know, we know film. We'd never claim to know everything or even a fraction of everything. But we've seen a few things in our day. And yet you picked one with some names I love, director I quite admire, and I'd never even heard of it. And it's funny because watching films like this feels like one of our daddy's films, right? Like this is very much our dad's generation. Like this would have been stuff they would have totally ate up and loved, it feels like.
Yes, I think so. Yes.
Like on cable, they're watching it on a Sunday afternoon. It feels like that, right? It's got that vibe. And another thing I find very interesting about this, we don't talk about a lot of sub films on our shows. Not that this is in and of itself, I guess it's, you know, you hear the term Christmas adjacent for films. This is kind of sub adjacent.
Yeah.
We're making up a new genre here, sub adjacent.
Yeah. But, the only fault of this movie, I think, as far as that genre goes, is am I right in saying there's almost zero moments? Well, except for the end, there's almost zero moments of them in the sub, actually.
Correct. There are usually above the water.
Yeah, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of a different touch.
Bit of a different touch. I mean, it's got some sub stuff in it. The film opens, got a lot of good practical stuff, right? This is an era when, you know, you weren't getting away with a lot of green screen and stuff. We get some flames and there's things flying around and guns going off. And sound design's great. And it feels to me really like a really meaty, you know, one of the big things I take away from this film, watching this film is how tactile it feels. Like I feel the heat of the sun.
Yeah.
It feels very weathered and sweaty and salty to me.
And there's no real faking some of the stuff that goes on here too. That the thing I love about this movie, and one of the reasons why I kind of wanted to talk about it, is I love that almost all of it feels clumsy.
It does.
He's not really a pilot by trade, and he has to get this plane going, and it has this great sequence where he's trying to get this plane off the water. And some of that's done by O'Toole, and some of that's done by a stunt guy. But it just seems like the whole time you're watching it, it just feels like it's going to be a disaster. Like this whole thing is going to fall apart. And I can't believe it doesn't. And then when he does get in the air, it isn't even graceful then.
No, there's something very tense and thrilling about this because it's very slapdash. Mm-hmm. And there's this sort of this determination and this vision for him to kind of get this plane going. And there's a couple of sequences in this that, despite sort of in the grand scheme of things in comparison to kind of huge set pieces, there's not a huge set piece per se, but within the emotional context of the film and kind of the physical, what we're seeing on screen, it's very tense and very thrilling and very sort of white knuckle.
Right? Yes.
So do a good job with this kind of this slapdash kind of tin can rubber band.
Yeah, if you will, baby.
Yeah, he just threw Will. And this gets into that, these themes that we see in films that, you know, we love: man versus nature, man versus man, man versus self. A lot of this stuff, this plays in those realms as well, right?
Yeah, and it plays with, you know, revenge as well. So it kind of gives you that that simple motif, which is revenge. But it's a weird revenge movie, though. And that it never really feels as visceral, I think, as you want it to feel.
I agree with you. And I have to say, I like this film.
Yeah.
But I do feel that that's one of the shortcomings of the film is this. It never feels as visceral or kind of as urgent as I'd like it to.
Well,
I never really go, yeah, come on, you know.
Yeah. So I think that's interesting because here, one of my takes is, so the German guys, even though Horst Janssen's kind of prominent in spots he's in, he has a couple of great scenes. You could take the angle of the vengeance being from their side because it almost feels like there's more kind of a visceral nature from their side with the vengeance than from the Peter O'Toole side, which seems kind of, for lack of a better word, almost kind of lackadaisical or almost kind of mundane in a weird way. It never really feels like a lot of passion, although there are some moments when O'Toole is clearly upset. There just feels like there's this, I don't know how to describe it.
I know what you mean, though. I know exactly what you mean, because that's one of the things I took away that, in a way, shoots the film in the foot.
It does, a little bit, yes.
Right? Because if you took the stakes in this film, the emotional stakes and what he had to do, you think, wow, this sounds fantastic. As good an actor as O'Toole is, there's something about him that doesn't quite speak to the emotional urgency or fury of what the character should have been able to convey.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Because O'Toole's a lot of things, but I don't think of O'Toole as fiery.
Yeah. I think of him as, you know, this is part of the curse of being in a film like Lawrence of Arabia is that, you know, that film, there's a character arc. Lawrence, you know, starts out as one type of character. He finishes off as another type. He does become fiery, for lack of a better word, but I don't know. There's always been something about O'Toole that seems maybe overly civilized.
I agree with you.
Which is weird because, again, behind the scenes, evidently he was quite the hellraiser and, you know, quite a party animal and a rambunctious type. Difficult, some would say. But he never really kind of comes off like that. Now, I will say this. He can do a lot with just his face and his eyes and stuff. I do think he's good in just about everything I've ever seen him in. I just think for the best intents and purposes, I think sometimes he just didn't always pick the best material For him.
The best showcase is for his strengths.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it felt like acting was sometimes just a job. But, you know, I mean, you can say what you want to say about that. I mean, he does obviously commit to this movie and everything else, but I think Yates and him, for whatever reason, I don't think the thesis of what they're going for here, which is vengeance and from a positive, I don't think it really pays off until the very end. And by then, it honestly, it's almost a little too late.
I agree completely with that, because to have O'Toole as your vessel here, and I love O'Toole. I think he's an all-timer, right? He's great. But like I said, it's just a little bit square peg round hole,
yeah,
which impacts how we're emotionally responding every step of the way to what he's doing to get his revenge.
Right. Right.
Right. We almost feel like the Germans, in a sense, were like, what's he doing? Why is he doing this?
Yeah.
what's going on?
Yeah.
Right. Which is kind of strange. And you know, I think one of the other big missteps for me, and this was one of the criticisms I had with Robert Eggers' The Northman, as good of a film as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that missteps kind of in the same way, but it's handled a little differently, is this becomes very singular minded about the revenge. And I get it, the revenge at all costs, at what cost? But I think there's a real missed opportunity when you have an actor, and I can't speak to, I can speak to Noiré because I know his work very well, but I can't speak to Phillips too much as an actress. She's good in the film, certainly. But I think there's a real missed opportunity to have a human connection with Noiré and even with Phillips. A lot of it is him lying around, recovering, trying to get in the boat. I think to even give them 5 or 10 minutes of kind of existential dialogue, just dialogue, talking about life and humanity and really strengthening their bond, their friendship, their relationships, would have gone a long way towards, I think, more of an emotional impact for me with the film.
Hmm. Yeah, I think you're right.
Right, because they it's almost like O'Toole shoves them to the sidelines and they become marginalized as characters. So by extension, emotionally, there's no real payoff with them.
Right.
So, which I think is unfortunate. But yeah, the film's got a really great, you know who else forgot to mention? The score for the film, John Barry, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not John Barryman. John Barry.
Man.
Comma. Man. Wow, it'd be a different film, different score. So yeah, it feels very like sunburnt, very salty.
Haggard. I mean,
haggard,
sweaty.
Feels leathery and weathered. And
yeah, Philippe Noiré looks like he, you know, as great a face as he has, he looks like he might stink a little bit.
He might smell a little bit like onions, man.
Yeah, he's pretty
maybe past onions now.
Yeah, he's got some. You know, his shirt's wet in all the right places.
Yes, that's right. That's right. But. That moment when O'Toole gets that plane going and it's flying, kind of flying through the tree line. It's a really, really wonderful sequence. It is very thrilling.
It is. And it's clumsy, again, right? It's just like you're waiting for him just to destroy the plane.
Yeah, you absolutely are. And it's kind of a white knuckle moment, a white knuckle sequence. And I think that's kind of testament to, the magic of old time film, but this is a film that's 50 years old, 50 yeah. plus years old.
Well, it's practical. It's all practical.
It's all practical. And I think just to see that in the scene, in the film, someone's letting the dog out without turning off the home alarm.
There we go. Now
we go.
This is a new one.
Everyone's up.
We've never had a home alarm go off on the show. That's a new one.
Yeah. That's right, man.
We finally get to check that off the bingo card.
Yeah, the bingo card, that has been covered on the bingo card. But the plane sequence is great. I mean, it's really great. And again, in the grand scheme of things, this isn't, you know, someone who's devouring worlds or anything. It's just this moment where it's man versus machine.
Yeah.
Right? Man, this urgency he has. So
there's a part of me, too, that while watching this film, there's a part of me that wonders if the lack of success of this film isn't because... Well, I don't know how it was released. I don't know, I wasn't around during this time frame. I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's definitely a 70s film. You can feel that through and through. But I'm sitting there watching, and I'm thinking this biplane versus the submarine. I'm having a hard time buying it in some ways. Now, I'm not one of those kind of guys that puts logic into anything I watch. If I did that, I wouldn't watch Italian cinema.
No. Oh, we definitely wouldn't watch Italian cinema.
But at the same time, I think to myself, you really got to have some ingenuity. And he does have some great moments, the moments with the big glass jugs and that idea. And I love that, you know, he uses these big glass jugs as almost like these giant Molotov cocktails, and he actually, you know, hurts his own plane doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I love the practicality of that and everything, but that at that point they're not, he's not really attacking the sub. I think he's just attacking a hideout spot, right?
Yes, that's right.
Like some type of little hideout spot they've created. And so when he finally does go against the sub, he has to actually use almost like a fishing boat. And I wish there was more of that. I wish there was more of that. I mean, they wait till the very end to do it, but I wish there was a little bit more of the cat and mouse game that the end of the film kind of plays with as well. The plane takes up a huge chunk of the film, and it's great, but it would have been great to see some more of the Philippe Noiret's fishing boat versus the submarine.
And, you know, I guess, you know, I kind of wrestle with what I think Yates is going for, you know, a little bit of, you know, man's sort of bloodlust and sort of singular minded revenge isolates him. It's going to be his downfall. I mean, I get all that, but again, bit of a missed opportunity. You're getting away from the plane. You're getting the boat. Noiré is going to say, you know what, dude? Like, you're kind of on your own on this one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he kind of walks away from the whole thing.
Yeah, and he does, and it's...
Which in some ways, weirdly, it's kind of the heart of the film. It's kind of like he walks out on the, you know, on the story, and it almost feels like the film gets slightly deflated.
Well, yeah, and it becomes this thing where, you know, he's a bit of a conscientious objector, Noir's character, and he says, okay, I'm out, and he literally walks away from him. And again, I think that plays into maybe what Yates is going for with, you know, this guy's going to, you know, bury himself, you know, what's the saying? An eye for an eye leaves both men blind, whatever, all that stuff, all that sentiment, right? So again, I wish... You know, we get about a minute of time where Noiré talks about that and says, I'm out later, peace out, and leaves. I would have liked more of a debate between them a little bit. Just give them a scene to kind of stretch their legs as actors.
Yeah. I mean, there are several moments in the film where clearly anti-war sentiment is being projected from
very much
either the Doctor character or from the Noiré character. And they're questioning, you know, why, you know, they're on this island to get away from all that nightmare, from the world and its quote unquote civilized ways, which for whatever reason tend to lead to war and violence. You know, it's the great paradox of humanity. You know, civilization is only established via violence.
That's right, via uncivilized means, right?
Yes, yeah. So it's very interesting, and they're kind of making that argument, but O'Toole is so, you know, he's wired for sound, right? I mean, he's programmed to be a fighter, and he can't let it go. And maybe he's not wrong, because, I mean, we didn't talk about it, but, I mean, this movie does open with quite a violent attack on a boat. Some pretty impressive, I got to say, bomb explosions mid-boat with people on them. I don't know how they pulled those off without somebody getting hurt. You know what I'm talking about? There's like moments where they're on like little rafts, and like the middle of the raft blows up, and there's people there. Clearly there's people on there.
Yeah. It's a little nuts.
I'm like, what, how the hell they do that? But you basically got people kind of cooking in the water because the water's on fire. That's how crazy this is. You know, I guess the oil, the petrol or the gas, whatever you petrol, like I'm from Europe or something. Hello. Yes. But the, feeling rather aristocratic. But the, you know, they're basically cooking them alive in the water, almost like a stew. And it, for the time, you know, it's a pretty graphic, violent opening. I wouldn't say it's insane, but it is off-putting, all the screaming and the gunshots and explosions and whatnot. So you can tell O'Toole's definitely got PTSD, big time.
Oh, big time, right? Big time.
And, you know, he's kind of processing that, but you would think he'd also... maybe he had a nervous breakdown or something, but I think he latches onto this idea of revenge for survival, which I think is an interesting element of the film, but I don't think it's ever really kind of, I mean, I think that's me putting my thoughts into that. I don't think it's ever really tackled in the movie, but I think for him, vengeance, working on this plane, going after these guys is the only thing he can do because inside he's completely broken.
Yeah, and I think the other interesting thing that plays into kind of the anti-war sentiment here is Sharon Phillips. She's great. You know, I'm not really familiar with her. I know she was in Dune and she had done some stuff. But she's really great. She almost has like a Katharine Hepburn vibe to me.
Katharine Hepburn really or Audrey Hepburn?
Katharine.
Okay.
Katharine.
I was going to go Audrey, but either way, we're on a Hepburn.
Oh. Well, she's a Hepburn either way, I guess. But, but no, I really like her in the film. I feel like, again, you know, that's the sentiment. And yet it's kind of like, he wants to have his I was going to say eggs, have his cake and eat it too by having them in the film, but they just get shoved aside by O'Toole.
Yeah. 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 It's interesting. It just, I think the film is good. I think we both agree with that. I just think it, I don't know. It's missing something and I'm not 100% sure what it is, but I think, the truth of the matter is, I think it doesn't hit enough on the kind of the B-movie elements of vengeance or comeuppance. Although I think it pays off interestingly, and it certainly pays off in a very 70s way. That I'll say for sure. I mean, 70s had a certain kind of ending, all 70s films, yeah. And this one does not disappoint.
Yeah, you're right, man. You're totally right.
Because, I mean, essentially what it's telling us is revenge is probably not the right way to go, right?
No, it's exactly, and this does feel very in the spirit of, you know, right at the tail end of Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Very much that sentiment. Like,
I mean, I like it. I like the way it ends, but
I love it. I think it's a fantastic ending. I just, like I said, it's funny this one, and it sounds like we're really damning it, but I think it's a good film. I just feel like there's a missed opportunity for it to really become like one of those real, I think in some respects it is an unseen or hidden gem, but I feel like it could have been even more considering all the principles involved, right?
Yeah. 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 I think it's good. It could have been great.
I agree with that statement because all the practical stuff's there, the principles are good. And let's face it, the disc looks fantastic from Arrow, mm-hmm. right? Like you really get a sense of that kind of leathery, sunbaked, the heat and the sweat. It really looks great in the transfer that the restoration. And we almost get like this smaller scale Wild Bunch decision, right? Which, you know, that's a pretty powerful, decision.
Yeah. He has a moment where he could walk away.
Yeah, that's right.
But he decides that, you know, that's not his fate, which obviously as men, that's a story element that we all kind of fall victim to. And we're all like, you know, what do you do in this scenario? And I think that always kind of turns us on a little bit.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Speaking of being turned on, how about that dude that was very GGTMC that was oiled up in the U-boat? You see that guy, man? That guy is like... You know, he stepped off of like, I don't know what he stepped, like a post-apocalyptic film right into the U-boat.
Definitely a merchant marine there of some sort, yes.
Oh, yeah, man.
He's getting around from port to port. And
Fassbender would like a word with him in Quirrell, man.
He definitely, he's buying all the oils, those Tunisian oils, those...
Yeah, the world tour, man. He's picking up oils in every port. For sure, man.
Yeah, no, I saw him and I thought to myself, like, that would be us on a submarine.
Yeah, man, that's it. That's it, dude. We do get this really one real nice moment, though, with Noiré and O'Toole. And I love the line from Noiré when he says, "The world will never build men like us a monument."
So that's really good, right? I mean, because I think that's kind of what the idea of the film is
yeah. There's this
pointlessness ridiculous. To the whole thing.
Yes, the notion, this ridiculous notion. There's this feeling of grand intent, but really, yeah, the world will never build men like us a monument.
Yeah, because in the beginning of the film, they mention that through the radio that Hitler's dead. So
that's right.
The war is quote unquote over, but there are all these, you know, stories and whatnot of skirmishes going on after the war is over, because a lot of people didn't necessarily believe it. Hitler had reached such a point of power that people were like, well, he's probably not dead. They're probably just telling us that.
Yeah.
So we're going to keep fighting. and we're not going to give up. And, you know, this kind of ties into Oppenheimer a little bit with the Japanese. They're not going to give up, right? So I find that side of the story interesting, because what I always find interesting about war and about military personnel is just how heavily we program those people to fight the fight at all cost.
Yeah.
And how hard it is to give that up, to the point to where some don't even, you know, even when they come back from war or even some type of deployment that isn't, you know, violence, they still have a hard time readjusting to civilized, normal day-to-day life.
Yeah, there's no deprogramming. It's not just a switch you hit.
Right. You're just, you know, this is who you are. This is what you were made to do. There's no war to fight. What do you do with all those skills at that point? And do you give up, or do you stop? Do you retire? Do you, you know, I mean, and O'Toole, he's in the thick of it, and he just went through a major violent moment. And we didn't mention that there is one other survivor, but he doesn't fare too well. No. And I think that might take him over the edge at that point. At that point, he's like, this is personal, but it doesn't quite work, but yeah, you know, it was an attempt. I see what they were trying to do.
But there was an attempt.
Yeah, there was an attempt. It just doesn't quite work. There's not enough scenes between him and the guy, the other guy that survived. There's only like one real scene of them talking, and then next thing I know, you know, they're attacking that guy.
Well, it's that thing again where they kind of get away from some of the emotional stuff that would give it more weight and flesh, to then focus more on sort of the single-mindedness, which it's kind of like they shoot themselves in the foot, because maybe it's like, look, we're not focusing on that because he's just so driven that it's just we can't. But no, but that's what's going to give you the emotional heft you want.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
All right. Is that all you got?
Yeah, dude, I don't have a whole lot more to say on this one.
I don't have a whole lot to say either. I do think it's a good film. I'm glad I rewatched it. I'm glad Arrow put it out, because yeah. I'm glad it's out there. I think you can watch it on some of the streaming services. I'm not 100% positive. I feel like it was on Tubi or something, maybe. But I think it's out there. I think really the major things here is like you kind of talked about, it's really the acting more than anything. I think everybody's pretty good in the film, if not great. And I think, you know, part of the problem too is that, you know, the Germans never really, outside of Horst Janssen, they never really feel like real people either, except for the guy that's oiled up on the boat there. They never really feel like real people. They just feel like these kind of cardboard cutouts. But weirdly, like I said, there's this weird dynamic where they, you know, they almost spend more time in some ways showing the Germans get their revenge, as opposed to, even though the whole film is about Murphy getting the revenge, it just feels like he's kind of aloof and lost the whole time. And maybe that was the point of the movie, but I don't know. It loses some emotional heft in that way. I don't really know what else to say about it, other than, you know, this is definitely the definition of Sunday afternoon watch.
Oh man, totally.
When we talk about those kinds of films where, like, you're, you know, you just got some downtime, you don't want to really do anything else, you just want to kind of hang out in the house. It might be a rainy day, it might just be a lazy day, lazy Sunday, whatever, and you just kind of want to watch something that's kind of breezy, not too thought-provoking, maybe not get too involved in. And that's what this feels like. It's the kind of movie, and I don't mean this as an insult, we all do this, but it's the kind of movie that you don't even have to pause. You can walk away for a second and come back, and it's just a breezy film. And I think it wants to be deeper than that, but I don't think it kind of nails all the things it does. But I will say this, make sure that if you do watch this film, or if you buy the Arrow disc, make sure you at least watch the initial plane launch sequence and the bombing sequence with the plane, and make sure you at least watch the climax of the film, because both of those things are very powerful. I should say the intro is pretty powerful too. So there are good moments. There's at least three good sequences, I think, in the film that are definitely worth checking out. I really think that boat stuff toward the end is, and the more I'm thinking about it, I'm wondering if I like the boat sequence more than the plane sequence, or which one I like more. I don't know. But I do love the sequence with the plane a lot, because I love the scene of O'Toole and the plane going, fly, damn it, fly.
Oh yeah, that's a great sequence.
And you can tell he's, you know, he's really in that plane. And I don't think he, I know he didn't actually do the flying, but I mean, he's really in that plane at certain points on that water. And I can't imagine how rough that would be. You know, something going that fast. And there's this great, I will give it some credit too with the sound design. There's this great bit of just turning up the motor just a little bit every time to make it sound like it's getting faster and faster and faster. That really kind of amps up that, that anxiety you're feeling during that sequence. So I did kind of like that. I think I'm going to stick. Yeah. So you can kind of tell where my make or break's probably going to go here. But I did like that. I do think that's really well done. And Yates was always good at that. He's good at building tension. He did that in Robbery. He did that. He does that in Bullet, which we've never covered. Yes. But I mean, I think he does that well. He actually did it in Crawl, of all things, as well. So he definitely is a filmmaker who covered the gamut of genre. So, all right, I'll kick it over to you. Make or breaks, MVTs. What you got?
Yeah, shout out to Yates for being a very diverse filmmaker, right? So
yeah, he was.
Yeah, no, for sure. My make or break, I wanted to go with that scene when he first got the plane flying over the treetops. I really love it because it's like, come on, come on. It's one of the few moments where there is a bit of a visceral kind of holding on, and you're really hoping for that result that he's hoping for. But ultimately, I want to go with the finale. I think it really states the thesis for this. It is effective. It does have emotional heft. It doesn't have as much as maybe it could or should have, because we're not given enough chance to have O'Toole's character really humanized beyond this sort of being a vessel for revenge. So that's my my make or break. My MVT for this one, I'm going to go with the locale, which is kind of weird.
No. I don't think it's weird. It's a unique, I don't even know how many films have shot there. It's like one of the biggest rivers in Venezuela, though, and it's huge. It almost looks like an ocean. It must be huge if they put a U-boat in there.
Well, yeah, that's right. But I feel like it really lends itself to this whole man against, you know, everything of the film. You feel very weathered and sunbeaten, and I mean, I guess I could go with Holcomb because of what he conveys with his cinematography, but just that locale feels very cut off, very isolated. They're on their own. The elements are going to punish them. They're going to wear them out.
Yeah.
The sun and the heat and very weathered. And it just, for me, I think that communicates what it needs to as effectively as anything else does in the film. So I really like that. They just feel isolated. My score for this one's a straight 7 out of 10. I think you'd sum this up perfectly. And I've completely felt the same way. This is like a film, a Sunday afternoon film. Don't want to damn with faint praise. They can't all be masterpieces. They can't all be 8.5s.
No.
Right? So this is a good film with some really, you know, Sean Phillips puts in a good turn. Noir A in the limited stuff he's given. O'Toole, you know, he's not going to stink out the joint. You're going to get some adventure, some kind of thrilling stuff. Forrest Jansen, oily dudes on the U-boat. There's worse ways to spend a Sunday.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay. My make or break, I think that's totally fair. My make or break is definitely the flying sequence. Although I do think the boat sequence at the end is very good as well. And the cat and mouse game at the end. I love the moment when he's kind of looking over the edge of the barge. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I love that with the torpedo thing. It's a torpedo. Not a torpedo thing. It's a torpedo. But I love that moment. And it just feels very it feels like it's, you know, it's practical. So it's just kind of cool. My MVT, I am going to go with O'Toole in this one. I do think he's really good in the film. He's like chewing on cigarettes. He's haggard. He's worn. He's definitely got the PTSD, which is something they wouldn't have talked about in this time period. But it's pretty amazing and pretty well done. Not his greatest performance, but I think he's really good and he holds the film together. But I think everybody in the film is really good, honestly.
They are.
My score is, you know, I was going to go 6.75, but I think I agree with you. I think this is a straight 7.
I was going to do the same, man. I was like a 6.5. And then you and I started talking about it. Mm-hmm. And I felt like there, you know, and part of it was I was a bit distracted. Things going on at home and I'm trying to watch and trying to get into it. And I don't want to card the film for me not coming to it with the...
Sure.
So, and yeah, I talked to this and there's enough meat on the bone here to really appreciate and give it that 7.
Yeah, no, I would totally. My thoughts are typically 8 or above is, you know, pretty much great. And, you know, 7 is usually, you know, 6.5 to 7.5 is usually means I'd rewatch it again.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I won't go out of my way to rewatch this, if it was on or if somebody wanted to watch it, I'd totally watch it with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's like I think it's a rewatchable film. So yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, bravo to Arrow for putting it out because it is underseen. And maybe they'll get some other Peter Yates stuff out. I don't know. Did Robbery get a Criterion release? I think Robbery got some kind of release.
Just wondering that.
Because
it feels like it should.
We did that a long time ago. I believe Bryn might have picked that for us to cover, I feel like, because he's a big Stanley Baker fan. So
that's right. He's a big Baker. He's a Baker Stan.
That's right. Baker Stan. That's right. All right. That is the big show. We want to thank Arrow Video for letting us check out Murphy's War. We'll be back next week. What are we doing next week, Will? What do we got?
So next week, it's going to be a very different film. I was looking to get, you know, it's funny. We always talk about horror being our gateway drug into the wonderful world of film. And we don't do as much horror as one would imagine. So, I don't know, I was doing some digging around and I'd never seen this. I thought it has a great poster. I feel like Vinegar Syndrome put this out. They've created a...
They did, yeah.
Quite the market for these regional horror films. So we're going to dip into the wonderful world of Gorman Beckard's Disconnected, a shot on video surreal horror film from Waterbury, Connecticut, 1984.
Yeah, I have seen this film already, and it is very Waterbury, Connecticut.
Yeah.
That's what I'll say. That's what I'll say right now. But yeah, that'll be an interesting conversation.
It will. It's... yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, and you are right. It's weird. We don't do as much horror as you would think. I think that's because there's so many podcasts that do horror.
Yes.
That we try to get away from it sometimes, but, you know, we bring it back. So,
yeah, there's always love, man. There's always, just like there's always money in the banana stand, there's always love in our hearts for horror.
Oh, yeah, it'll always be the number one genre. Always.
Yeah, man, that's it.
All right, that'll be fun to talk about. We'll make sure to check out our brothers and sisters, Not a Bomb, Watch Skip Plus, Feminine Critique, Not a Live Living Podcast, Married with Clickers, See Here, love that album, Caliber 9 from Outer Space, Raiders of the Podcast, and make sure to check out John's video channel, and now for something a little bit different. I'm pretty sure that's everybody. I hope it is. I wrote it down a while back. I hope it is. Let's just put it that way. And like I said, you can hear me on Not a Bomb Classics, which is kind of a subset of their shows. You can hear me on there, kind of an experiment we do. For fun, we did bad films last year. We're doing quote-unquote great films this year. So I should say quote-unquote bad films last year because a lot of those bad films I quite enjoyed. But anyway.
Can I ask you a question? Have you guys or have they ever done Ishtar?
They have, actually, in the regular Not a Bomb.
I got to listen to that.
Yeah.
Watched Ishtar. I'll talk about it next week. I watched Ishtar finally.
Nice.
Criterion's got it on their Razzie section. I was like, you know, man, I finally got to watch this thing. So I'm going to go listen to that episode.
Nice. Cool. Nice. Yeah. They did it on an episode proper. I wasn't on that episode. They did it on their own. So they have some very interesting conversation about it.
Nice.
Yeah. I think you'd like that episode quite a bit, actually. All right. That is everything. We hope you guys are having a good week. Stay away from getting sick. I advise that. And I will say adios.
Adios.
.com and you can email the gentleman at Midnight Cinema. Thanks for listening. You can find the gentleman at ggtmc.com and you can email the gentleman at midnightcinema@gmail.com. We'll be right back.